Hi guys, welcome back to another episode. It's episode 31. We're talking everything from a 1500, from a 1500 sandwich to the newest political shakeup, plus our fresh take on how Farmer Wants a Wife is going. This episode is packed full of ups and downs of the agricultural landscape, so keep tuned and I don't know. I wanted to say something fancy there, but I think that'll do for now. So stay
That's all
tuned.
right. Keep listening. Don't log off. We'll improve with a gallop, we swear. It's been a big day.
Let's start with some chit chat. Gillian, what have you been up to this week? I see you're in Alice Springs.
I'm in the very bland cabin. But do I look fresh and glowing? Because I've been using my stuff that the wonderful people at Gondwana Macadamias have sent me. And this is how clueless I am. I got it out and like I put out my hand. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll pump a little bit of my hand and put it on my face before bed. It's a bloody facial mist. You meant to
It's
spray it
amazing.
straight on your face. I ended up with oil everywhere. But it is really nice and light. So I have been using it every evening after my shower and sort of refreshing myself because, with all the time I spend in airports and on planes and in motels, my skin gets very dry.
Yeah.
But no.
I've definitely
It is a
noticed the
really
rest,
good
yeah.
product. Yeah. And coming into winter, like especially if you're out in that cold wind, you need something that's a little bit more nourishing. And don't use it during, like, don't put it on. If you're going to put it on in the morning, put sunscreen on as well. But it's really nice at nighttime because it's really light. It doesn't soak into your pillow or anything. But other than that, I've just been sitting around in Alice Springs while Eleanor goes to school. It's sports week this week. So she's, what are you doing tomorrow? Frisbee?
Disco.
Oh, disco tomorrow night. Woohoo! And she's house captain. She would like everybody to know out of the whole
Yay,
like three kids.
Eleanor.
Carrying on the very fine tradition of every single one of my kids being involved in some capacity or another. Oh, here we go.
Yeah,
Ta-da!
there's the badge to prove it.
Yep, she's got the badge to prove it. She's very excited. So we'll be making pom poms and making a big song and dance over everything on Friday. So yeah, and we're going to have to dispatch early to help set up the tents because that's one of the responsibilities you get when your kid gets to be house captain. So yay! Oh, the
What fun.
kids don't set up the tents. The parents set up the tents. I've just been advised. Oh, but anyway, it's all fun and games. It's a good day. The kids are going to have lots of fun. So, what are you in up to? You're looking much better. Last week, you were still a little bit, I was still a bit concerned, but you're looking much more healthy this week.
Yes, I did notice when I was editing, I was like, oh, I definitely don't look as good as I was feeling. I can say the same for this week as well. I'm getting more color back. I'm getting more tone in my voice. I'm definitely feeling better. Still trying to shake the ear infection, and some of the other little bits and pieces that are going on, but definitely back on track and where I need to be. So it's what's that? That's been nearly 4 weeks now, I think. So big recovery. So don't let yourself get that low. It's a long way to get back up out of that hole of not looking after yourself.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do. Hey, Katja.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought your mist in today to talk about Gondwana Macadamia because I've also been using it, and I did have in my notes to share that it hasn't stained my pillow like some other products, and I do like how light it is. I started using it, I think it was 2 times a week, and now I'm up to pretty much every night as well. I've definitely noticed it, particularly in these autumn mornings, how it's made such a difference. I might even give it another couple of days for some more colour to come back in my face, and then I'll do a before and after photo because I took one before I started using the mist that I'd like to share.
But it's and like we make a lot of fun about like promoting stuff and all that sort of stuff, but we don't promote stuff that we don't actually use or believe in. Like if it was rubbish, we wouldn't talk about it. We would just be very polite and say, thank you very much. That's great, and not talk about it in public. But it is, and I don't know what possessed them. They used to be cattle farmers and then they decided to farm macadamias. So I don't know what would be a harder job, to be completely honest, but get behind them if you can. Locally owned and operated, Australian made, excellent product, you know, cool people doing good things.
Absolutely. I've sent Jillian some reels of some of their products, and the unboxing of the pack that was sent to us. So thank you so much, Gondwana Macadamias. We'll add those reels to our socials this week. And yeah, we absolutely love the products. Get behind them.
I'll just write that down now so I don't forget.
Forget. While you're writing that down, this week has been a really big week on farm. We've got our on-property bull sale coming up in a few weeks, as well as our national show and sale. So big week cattle-wise. I also have been working on a lot more of the Ultimate Farm Wife. So made a few big decisions with that going forward. So I've brought on two helpers to help me. So the Lou and her business, the administration agency, is coming on to help with the paperwork side behind the business, because there's lots of paperwork and research and all sorts of things behind the scenes that you don't see when you are podcasting. And I've also brought on a social media girl, because that's all part of my revamp of taking care of myself and taking a few things off my plate. So thank you so much for Natasha coming on to do the socials, and for Lou and her team at the administration agency, who's going to take on some of that admin work, which is fantastic. That means I can focus on interviewing for season 8, which I'm really, really excited about. It is a revisit of previous Ultimate Farm Wife alumni. And we're deep diving further based on the questions that were sent in from the community. So looking forward to rolling out those interviews.
That's, I always love a follow-up, because often I've found when people do a podcast and stuff and they get like their story and that goes out into the community, it's like a catalyst moment for them. And it's like, and so, and then they make changes, or they like, oh, you know, I'm going to really stick to this path or whatever. So it's always good to go back and catch up with like sort of people after, you know, what's happened. A bit like what happens with Farmer Wants a Wife. When you catch up after the filming stops and you find out that they've all split up already. Or they didn't even make it to the end of filming and it's just some clever editing.
Yeah, isn't that always interesting when you think, hang on, where did they get that footage from then?
Yeah. Did you watch yesterday, last night, whenever it was, where they're
Did I
doing all the
watch
touchy
Monday
feely
night's
stuff?
episode? I watched all except for the last 15 minutes. I think I've got 15 minutes left of the episode to go, because I never watch it when it's live. I always go back and watch it on demand.
Oh, look, I just can't anymore. It's given me the ick. Making them touch each other, like in front of the other girls, like that's just
Oh,
weird.
yes.
Weird. Wrong. Don't like it. Don't enjoy it. And of course, now they're doing the villain edit on some of the girls.
I think that's the first time they've actually had these. So I think they were. Okay, let me restart that. For those who haven't been watching and are just listening to our review on Farmer Wants a Wife, this year was the first year that Nat wrote the farmers a letter and encourage them to explore different layers of intimacy and romance and connection with each other. So basically, it was a letter prompt with, I think it was made up of three games, and each was very different aspects of intimate. So there was like true or false, or how well are we suited, or one of the farmers said physical touch is, one of his love languages. So then the farmer had to be blindfolded, and then the girls had to show intimacy through physical touch. But at the same time, the other girls who were on farm were all watching. And it was the most cringing moment, I think, of the season so far for me, because I was like, how can you really explore that with everybody else watching? And then on top of that, when Farmer Thomas had his single date, they had it on the veranda of the house, and I was like, What are the other girls doing? Like, I understand there's a thunderstorm and you probably had something else set up, you know, down the paddock or something. But I was like, oh my gosh. Are the other girls sitting at the window watching them?
It is honestly like they're trying to turn it into Married at First Sight, like those sorts of like where they have all the sexy time and that sort of thing. And I think it's pretty disappointing because this is one of like sort of the last reality romance shows that didn't go into that. And, you know, I think, and like obviously farmers have sex, otherwise we'd all die out. But, you know, it's like we are normal people and everything else like that. We all, you know, do whatever. But it's like trying to bring that into mainstream TV and I think it just sort of doesn't really fit with the whole image that they've been trying to portray of this like wholesome country lifestyle. And it's like just pick what you want the show to be. Like, you can't have a foot in both camps. Like, if you wanted to make the most, I don't know, sexually explicit farmer show, if you want to just go to like a B&S or a bull ride or something and just follow people around, you know, you wouldn't even have to script it. You'd get some of the most outrageous things you've ever seen. Like
leave races, this. Go to the horse races.
Yeah. Go anywhere where there's young people who don't see members of the opposite sex or people they're attracted to, going along with our theme of there's all sorts out there, very often, and bring them into one place and add generally a heap of alcohol and see what happens. Like, but yeah, you can't have both sort of thing. So like, sort of leave this one alone, I think. Like, if you, that's the way the producer wants to go and get a job over on Max or something, and just sort of leave it out of it. Like, I know sex sells and that sort of stuff, but I want to see more. Like, they were in the shearing shed and, you know, loading wool bales. Oh no, it was hay. They were stacking idiot bricks, little loosened bales of hay. Like, we call them idiot bricks because that's horse people buy them. and, you know, I want to see more of that in their white linen shirts and their white sneakers and their white hats. Like, I want to see more of that sort of stuff. That's the sort of stuff that I find enjoyable. And you soon find the caliber of a person when they can sort of put up with being poked with loosen and hay and be hot and sticky and itchy all day. You find out what sort of person they really are, instead of blindfolding old mate and then touching him while a couple of his other girlfriends watch on. Like, that's bizarre.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if it was part of, you know, just the editing, but on Farmer Corey, I felt so sorry for Farmer Corey and one of his new girls, is it Chloe, who the other girls just seemed to hammer in the questions. And I thought, oh my goodness, why would you do that? That's one, not nice, but she held herself well in that edit, and it probably actually brought them closer.
Yeah, and it's really odd because the show started out with a sort of like solidarity of sisterhood, and the girls weren't being nasty to each other, and I think that sort of doesn't play into the sort of theme that they're trying to build. And so they've tried to manufacture sort of possessiveness and jealousy and nastiness where there probably isn't any, and going so far as to like ask them direct questions and those sorts of things. Like, I know it's a hard, being a producer of a reality TV show is a hard job, but, you know, think about it a bit more. So come on, lift your game. So that's Farmer Wants a Wife. It's getting ickier and more cringeworthy by the day. And I don't know if I'll be able to see that at the end of the season, especially now I know the results of everything. So,
I still don't know the results. I've guessed. Maybe I should put it in a message to you, my guess, and then we'll just see how it goes. Because we're getting pretty close to the grand final. That must be coming up fairly soon. I assume is that next week or the week after?
Oh, I've got no idea. Like, I'm only vaguely interested in it, but yeah.
You're watching it because I told you to, and I'm watching it because I enjoy it, and I thought it'd be nice to talk about it.
It is interesting to talk about because it's when you talk about bridging the rural-urban divide, it's probably this is what makes me so angry about it, actually, because this show is the only vehicle we've got, the only sort of commercial mainstream vehicle we have to bridge the urban-rural divide. And they make rural people look like dumb hicks who like live like hermits when most of these people probably live 10 minutes from town. And they make the girls all look like really terrible people when they're probably just ordinary girls just having a bit of fun, you know, living their best life, who cares? And it just upsets everyone instead of bringing everyone together. Like, we've said it before, Katja, but they need to bring us on as consultants. Like, honestly, they are missing a golden opportunity here, to actually like revamp the show and make it worth listening and watching. We will just totally change the whole game. I've got some excellent things that they can practice and work on. Yeah, be great. I want to see them have a bath in a bucket, like not actually see them, but I want to see them like when the pump fails and you've got no water in the house tank, how do you wash yourself? Because I reckon that will upset a few people, most definitely.
Absolutely. Well, let's head into something completely different. We got sent in a video this week. It is called, what's the title of the actual video? Can't remember. Where's your mind message to you?
The $1,500 sandwich.
The $1,500 sandwich. I will link that in the show notes below. I do not know if I'm savvy enough yet to input. Actually, it's a pretty long video. I will just put it in the notes below. A link to that in the notes below.
And I've written it down on my list to add to the socials. So I'll put the YouTube link on the socials where you can click it on there. But yeah. And how long did the sandwich take, old mate, to make? This is the thing.
It took
6 months.
6 months to make this sandwich. It was 6 months, but kudos to him. He went and farmed this. He has no farming background. He's a person in the city who decided he was going to make a burger from scratch and work out how much it actually costs to make a burger from scratch. And he even went and collected seawater and evaporated it just so he could have the salt. So he went through every step of making this burger and it worked out to be $1,500. And at the end of it, he goes, "Oh, I guess it's all right." Like, it wasn't even a brilliant burger. And he put 6 months into making it and growing his own lettuce and going and seeing the farmer and collecting the beef and.
And this like this is the sort of thing that I love about YouTube and these sort of long form videos, and this is the sort of stuff that we need to highlight. Like, when we say we're really good at what we do, know, that we're being quite modest actually, because especially in Australia, we are excellent at producing food in one of the most challenging environments in the world. And we don't just produce enough to feed ourselves, we produce enough to feed a lot of the world. And I think consumers need to acknowledge that and appreciate that. Like, we're not asking you to thank us. We're not asking you to, give us special consideration. But when we say this is going to be a real problem and it's going to make it harder to grow food and make it more expensive, we just expect you to take our word for it, because we actually do know what we're doing and what we're talking about.
And can you imagine if you had to make a burger yourself for our urban listeners and for those who don't make all their own food products? I make a fair few because that's just the type of person I am. And I love cooking and I love doing things from scratch. But you've all heard before, Jillian's not that way inclined. A lot of our listeners are not that way inclined. They are just going to go, they don't have the time to faff.
Yep.
So we go to the grocery store, we buy our groceries. All the farmers in the background have done an incredible job, but can you imagine if you had to grow everything for that burger, can or that sandwich? Can you imagine if, it actually, like, he actually spent a lot of time and a lot of money in fabricating that sandwich for himself, and it was of okay quality. So yeah,
Yeah.
as Gillian said, we do a great job at what we do.
Yeah. And we do it because we're continually learning. Like, agriculture is a science. We're not just, and anyone who's ever tried to like grow a garden or anything, like, will know that it is a lot harder than it seems. And so when people who have no actual experience in producing any sort of food on any sort of scale say, "Oh, but there's a better way to do it and you should be doing it like this," bullshit. They don't know what they're talking about. Like, we are trying and testing it, this sort of stuff, with our own money all the time. We are doing experiments, we're investing in research, we are, you know, talking to agronomists and all those sorts of things. But when someone who just, like, I don't know, the one that gets me is like when journalists decide they're going to say what's wrong with agriculture, it's like, you've got a job. Do that one. Stop trying to tell me how to do my job.
Absolutely.
For which we do have a book written by a journalist who is also a farmer.
Ah, is Gabrielle that the one Chan. That I said through?
Yeah, Gabby Chan. Yes. She used to write for every farmer's nemesis. I think she might still write for them. The Guardian, you know, number one farmer bashing rag in Australia, which is, it's a very interesting thing because it's like I always say, like I know lots of journalists and politicians and all those sorts of things. Like they're not bad people, but you've got to pay the bills. Like sometimes you don't get to choose where you work or who you work for. So, and when you do, you have pride in your craft, so you do the best thing that you can do. And Gabby wrote a book called Why You Should Give a Fuck About Farming. And the amount of criticism she got when she announced the title of that book. Oh, women shouldn't swear. Oh.
We're trying to set a good image.
Me, 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 me. All the old white people came out to fucking complain. They shouldn't use strong language in public. It's bad enough the women's are allowed outside of the kitchen, let alone be writing books with swear words on the front cover. Jesus.
So the book and article was sent to us by an ag fam. I have ordered a copy, so if you guys would like to order a copy and read along with me, we'll be coming back and circling back to that book and having a discussion on that in a future episode.
Yeah. And you know, Gabby's pretty smart, and she has the background or the benefit, I guess, of having that sort of urban experience, but also being in an agricultural sphere and being able to see sort of both sides of the story. And too often in ag, we discount people with different views to ours that don't align to ours, I think to our detriment, which is partly why the divide has grown so broad. So yeah, definitely get a copy and have a read, because and any of our urban listeners, I would urge you to do it as a matter of urgency, because, you know, like we just said, farmers, we're pretty good at what we do. We're the experts, and you need to take us more seriously or you're going to go really hungry, and we don't want that to happen. We won't starve. It won't take us 6 months and $1,500 to grow a bit of food. We'll have a nice little trading economy set up amongst each other. But you fellas who can't grow anything, who can't not grow anything, might struggle a bit. But yeah, that's you know, we all serve a purpose in this society. So learn about it and learn to take our word for it when we say things are really challenging. But yeah.
Absolutely. So our next topic will be the political shakeup. But before we get to there, keep listening. We're going to go into question and answer section. This is where you can send in questions for us to answer. If we don't have the answer or we think someone else is better off answering it, we will do like we did last week, where we get in a professional or an expert in that industry. But without further ado, we'll jump into that. So the first one is, Gillian and Karcher, I attended your workshop with the National Farmers Federation on leadership. I loved the workshop and your different views and paths. Quite different paths we take, and the way we deal with people is very different for that. Opposites do attract. Thank you for sharing your experience. My question is, how can women in agriculture build confidence and assertiveness in their roles?
Oh, that's it is a hard one, actually, because the moment you start to be assertive, you're a mouthy bitch.
Mm-hmm.
You're arrogant. I recently, like only a couple of weeks ago, had this very experience in a meeting where I quite firmly told a gentleman no several times, and I was told repeatedly that I was wrong. and it is hard. The first time I did it, the first time I ever did it, my heart was pounding, my hands were shaking. I always find it really, oh, Jesus, someone's cracking off outside. Hope that didn't come through.
Oh,
headphones.
We can't hear it. It's not coming
oh,
through.
Oh, that's all right then. It was more foul language than I usually use. The first time I ever did it, and if you're ever in a meeting or something and you're fine and you need to sort of be assertive, I plant my hands firmly on the table in front of me, or I cross them in front of me and like, but put a little bit of pressure down so no one can see them shaking, and just that little bit of tension in your shoulders sort of holds your posture nice and straight. And if you feel like you're going to get too emotional, if you feel like you're going to like burst into tears, because that's something I have struggled with. When I get really angry or upset, I burst into tears sometimes. And that's, I don't know, it's just the way that I'm wired. Press your tongue to the roof of your mouth. Mm-hmm. And just breathe through your nose for a little bit and just sit like that. And that will help you center yourself. But no one else can see what's happening because you're all doing it internally. It's all inside. I have on occasions in a meeting when I've really lost my shit, held my finger up in front of someone and gone, shh, I'm still speaking. That's a very recent occurrence, though, because it took me a long time to get to that point. And it also is quite rude. Unless you push to that point, you shouldn't do that. But sometimes it is necessary. But the only thing that's going to get you through that is practice, 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 practice. And sometimes it's so hard. And if you can hold it together until you can walk out of the room, or, you know, if you're in charge of the meeting and you're finding that things are getting really challenging, say, you know, it's time for a break. Don't let anyone challenge you or question you. Say, we're all having a 10-minute break now. Go and get a drink of water, go to the toilet, and then we'll come back and reconvene. Yeah, there's lots of different strategies, but most of all, it's practice.
Yeah.
And when people do say you're a mouthy bitch or you're a cow, or as one gentleman said to me, oh, I wonder how your husband feels when you talk to him like that. And I said, I don't have to speak to him like that because he's not a fucking idiot. yeah, those sorts of things. It is a good witty comeback. Don't let them see that they're getting to you.
Yeah.
And they're going to call your names regardless, whether you do your job well or not. They're going to say things about you. So at least know within yourself you're doing it as best as you possibly can. And you will fail. I fail all the time. But then you go and you talk about it to someone else and they go, you're just human. You'll get better. And you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I do something similar. So I ground my feet. And when I really feel like the pressure's coming on, I actually bunch my toes and release them. Bunch my toes and release them. So I'm grounded by my feet and I'm tensing and releasing. And that doesn't show in the rest of your body, but it definitely helps. And just remembering to breathe also helps. With confidence, I think if you know your stuff, if you know your stuff and you know what you think and you know what your aim for that conversation or that meeting or that work project, whatever your aim is, whatever the goal is, stick with how you're going to get there. There's always going to be people who are going to say, you know, either support you or don't support you. There's always going to be people who are going to say really negative things. And there's going to be people who will outright lie just to rile you. Mm-hmm. And if you can keep composed, which takes practice, takes breathing, takes your feet being grounded, take your time to talk. Just because you're not speaking doesn't mean you don't have control of the topic or where you're going or that room. Because especially if you're in a position of authority or if they can't go forward on a project without your approval or input, sometimes not saying anything isn't a bad thing, particularly if you need a moment to restructure your thoughts. Particularly if they get in your face. I hate it when people want to get in my face. I just think that's my personal space. And I have taken a step back before, re-squared my shoulders, taken another breath, and then tried to continue. Because most of the time, if you have someone who's coming at you like that, you've got them. So don't let them rattle you, because you've got them. And you can use that, I've got you, and you're trying to rile me, as another booster for your confidence. I'm right. I know I'm right, and we're trying to get to this end goal. So try and use that as a way of getting behind yourself. Stand up for yourself, because a lot of the time no one else will. And, yeah, So I think Gillian's answered the assertive side, I've answered the confidence side. So I really hope that that is another, that answers your question and that you've got a lot to think and take away from that. I hope it helps.
And if you need to debrief, or if you want advice on how to deal with a challenging situation, just send us a text or email, and we'll do our best to give our little bit of advice, because I'm quite fortunate that I've got a big network of other sort of people I can lean on, and you know, I've got a mentor who's been in some challenging situations herself and has talked me through a lot of things. So yeah, we're always happy to help, because the more leadership positions that women occupy, and the better we are at, you know, just representing ourselves and representing our industry, is always a good thing. It's always a good thing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that question. I did laugh at this next one, Gillian, when it came in. It's called, "But Are You Really?" So, Gillian and Karcher, I truly enjoy listening to your podcast. Your humour is on point. Karcher, I'm really sorry to hear that you have been really unwell. In last week's episode, Gillian mentioned that we're not very good at asking for help. I wanted to challenge that idea. Is it that we're not good at asking, or is it that people simply don't recognise when we do? So often, when we reach out to friends or family or community members, you're met with, "I'm busy," or "Sorry, I have too much on." And just like that, you're left to manage alone. So I want to challenge other AgFabs listening. Are you really that busy? Are you too busy to recognize when someone close to you needs support, they need your help, and is in a situation? In some situations, people shouldn't have to ask. You should know, and you should be there.
That is a good point, and I think it's probably a bit of both. We, by the time we do ask for help, it's usually too far gone, and we're not really direct at asking for help, because I mean, I even do this with my own family. Like, I don't come out and ask, like, say to my mum, "Can you please?" Unless it's like, "Go to the shops and buy me this thing and I'll pick it up when I come down." Like, those sorts of tasks, like asks, requests, are really quite simple. But when you're needing that emotional support, or you might need a bit more long-term support, by the time we ask or phrase it, I think it's usually like we're already in a crisis. And I think we do need to get a little bit better at acknowledging that in other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and it really hurts when you finally reach out and you ask someone for help and they go, "No." And especially if it is family, it's devastating, and it teaches you that was a pointless waste of time, that just going to hurt your feelings, so why do it again?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think, because I talk a lot about succession planning and inter-family relationships and those sorts of things, I think that's where a lot of the sort of ill will and hurt feelings start. Is these people say that, "Oh yeah, we're your family now," and then you ask them for assistance or reach out to them for help, but they can't, won't, don't, whatever, and it just sort of sets up then this sort of bad feeling sort of cycle that's very challenging to break out of, because we're not really good at addressing that directly and, you know, confronting issues before they become massive things. We just sort of bury it down and go, "All right, learnt my lesson there. Don't think I'll be reaching out to them again for help."
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a very good point that listener has made.
Yeah. I also think there's been a bit of a change since COVID. Like, I know we can't blame everything on COVID, but there seems to be this real stay away mentality now, so that when you are sick, you know, there's a lot of people who will stay away instead of providing something, even if it's just a meal train, even if it's something. But also, you know, if in the example of being unwell, you're not in a space to think about what is it that I need. You go into survival mode and you just start going through the motions. And so sometimes the support, I think when she mentions, you know, they should just know, you don't want to be thinking for someone. To be like, okay, what do I need, and how do I communicate that to you? Because as you said, you're too far gone. You're usually just in survival mode. So in that case, like if you see someone is unwell, you used to just send something, whether it was a meal or whether it was just something nice in the mail to pick them up. If I have found out that friends of mine are unwell, usually I will send, a nice bar of soap and some nice writing paper, or if they're into something in particular. I've got one friend who is just an absolute fantasy novel fanatic, so I would send them a novel or something like that that they can read while they're getting better. It doesn't have to be something big. You don't have to drop everything and go over and help them and scrub their bathroom. I mean, that would be great, but at the same time, just those nice little bits of encouragement to rest, to get better, that sort of thing, I think is something we've sort of forgotten a little bit in society at the moment.
I think we have changed as people a little bit too. Like, we don't sort of have those same sort of relationships where, your mum's sick in bed, her best friend or sister-in-law turns up, lets herself into the house, starts watching the kids, cleans the kitchen, cooks dinner, and I don't think if you do have those relationships, that's amazing, and I'm really jealous. But I don't think we cultivate them as well as we used to anymore. And that's probably due to a lot of reasons. But yeah, the downfall of modern society, go back to the good old days when we all died at 35 and had incurable diseases, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's one of those things that we could probably work a bit harder to bring back.
Oh, but on that of sending people things, we have a discount code still with BorrowBox. So Fabulous 15, BorrowBox, we've got a video up on the socials. It is a book subscription service where you can either pay for a subscription, which is a monthly book box that gets sent to you with all sorts of different bits and pieces, or you can do a one-off. If it's just for you, or you can gift someone a BorrowBox. So it comes with the book, it comes with some snacks, it comes with comfy socks or stickers, whatever it is that you fill out in the quick little survey. So you log on the website, you fill out the survey, you put in your details, you pay for the box, it gets sent off from their warehouse to either yourself or whoever it is you're sending. So Fabulous 15, I'm pretty sure is the code. We'll get you 15% off a box.
Do that. Christmas sorted. Send everyone a box of stuff. Then you don't even have to go shopping. It
You don't even have to wrap it, it just turns up.
just arrives. Perfectly done. And you make yourself look like a superstar.
Absolutely.
Oh, what else? Yeah, what else have we got on the list? We've got a few things, haven't we? It's been a big week.
The
It's been a big
deodorant
day in
question.
politics. Oh, yeah, the deodorant question. Yeah, that was from the farmers in the females in agriculture Facebook group. And I find deodorant really, really interesting actually, because there's really only one type of deodorant I can wear that I don't stink when I wear it. And I don't know whether that's because we all have a unique sort of biome or skin bacteria or whatever. But I hear this a lot from a lot of people who are struggling to find a good deodorant where they don't smell anything like that. And embarrassingly, I don't know, I don't really care anymore because I'm old. If I'm at home by myself, as I am quite frequently, like not by myself, but with my family, and it's cold weather, you get up, you get dressed, you put on your three different layers. Deodorant is the last thing on my mind. And it's like, oh my God, I smell. Oh my God, where did that come from? And I go weeks without putting deodorant on. And then when I have to go to town, it's like, oh my God, I can't go out stinking in public. That's so rude. And I have to find my deodorant and start wearing it again. But like, I don't know, is this a big concern that we have in like mixed gender workplaces and those sorts of things? Because my boys, 19 and 14, stink to high heaven all the time. Doesn't matter what deodorant they put on. Yes, I know by about Smoko, they are rank. So I think we worry too much about deodorant. Just stink. And as long as you're washing yourself like in the evenings or mornings, whenever you have a shower, as long as you're like clean, you're going to sweat and you're going to smell. But yeah, so we had a few good suggestions. I like the Dove cream one. I can't handle the spray on stuff. It makes my underarms burn, especially if you're freshly shaven, which is another thing I don't bother doing much anymore because I'm old. If you do ever see me in a sleeveless top, don't look too closely because there's every chance that I have not remembered to shave under my arms. But yeah, it's so many, and there's like, and they, for me, the older I get, stronger smells really upset me. And a lot of women's deodorants and men's these days too are really, really strong smelling, and I just can't bear it anymore.
Yeah.
So what about you, Katya? What do you use?
I usually use whatever's on sale at the grocery store, but also just something that doesn't smell, something that doesn't smell, something that's more about, drying, keeping it dry. But I find soap more important than deodorant. So if you have a good quality soap and you are washing yourself properly, whether you choose to have a shower in the morning and in the afternoon, I'm just an afternoon before bed showerer. But if you've got a good, really good quality soap, I think that really helps, and I think that's really important. I notice on days where, I'm traveling and I don't take my own soap with me, like the hotel soaps and stuff like that, just do not do it justice. I notice when I travel away for work, whatever I take with me, it's just not good. At home, I use a good quality soap. The lady down the road makes a really high quality goat soap. So she uses goat milk. I know what your thoughts are on goats, Jillian, but you can't,
Goat soap's
it
not
doesn't
too
smell
bad.
like goats.
No, goat soap's much better than goat's cheese. I'll give you that much.
So I use that one, or I've got friends who really go for the Palm Grove yellow soap. It's got to be that yellow soap, they say.
Oh, mum and dad use that because it's got a deodorizer in it or something, and like, because yeah, because like dad's worked outside his whole life, so that's mum and dad's own. I like the Dove soap in our water because it's like nice and creamy and stuff, and it is fairly affordable. And I think that's the thing with, especially with soaps, you've got to do that trial and error to see what works in your water, because some soaps simply do not work in our water. You cannot get a lather, and then when you like you sit them up on the little soap rack, they dry like a brick, and so you can't even like you can't
Can't get
even
it
get
off.
any like soap out of them, and it's just. And then you go down the whole road because my boys prefer to use a liquid soap. And so they use a liquid soap. I'm the only one who uses the bar soap in my house. Everyone else has got liquid soap. So I'm quite happy. But yeah, it's just soaps, I think, are probably the most important thing. You're right, because deodorant's going to wear off anyway, I reckon. And if everyone you work with is that worried about how much you smell, oh, I don't know. You're not sitting in a tractor cab with them. Like, if I just sit in a tractor cab with someone all day, I'd probably put deodorant on. But if you're in a cattle yards, or if you're driving around on a bike or something like that, or if you're working in a dairy, those sorts of things, like, meh, use whatever.
Yeah, I
You're going to
think one of the
smell.
things I also noticed is like when you go camping or you're in a stock camp and you've got that fire smoke smell, you don't notice that unless you're with people who haven't been around the fire, or when you walk past someone, you're like, oh, they smell like the campfire. Like, so if you're all in together, you're all working together, you all smell the same, you're all probably covered in dung, you're all covered in mud, you've all been working hard, it's fairly common for you all to stink. So don't worry too much about that situation. It's what you do at the end of the day. If you're going to then go out and do something social, if you are really worried before you go back into the mess hall or sit down for dinner or something like that, it used to be very common before a meal to wash up. So if you're worried about it in that situation, take a break, take, the 5, 10 minutes to wash up before you go to a meal, before you turn up for dinner. That used to be, the thing. So I think that's something that we should bring back as well, is take your break, wash up, then turn up to dinner. You shouldn't be turning up to dinner in your work clothes anyway.
Yeah, there's a real reason that's a rule in a lot of stations that you have a shower before tea.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're in the camping at the stock camp, it might not be always possible, and sometimes you're running behind time or whatever. But you know, generally, it's the rule of you shower before dinner because other it's just good manners.
Yeah.
And during the day when you're at work, you're going to be dirty. We work in a dirty industry, like yeah, the cows and sheep and chickens aren't going to complain. So.
So in summary, soap and washing yourself is more important than deodorant, but find a deodorant that works for you and don't be stinky, as in don't get one that smells.
Yeah. Because I went to a girls' boarding school, and like when you're a young girl, you get obsessed with smelling. And I was back in the days of Impulse, which is just like a scented body spray. It's not even a deodorant. And like if you had like door duty where you had to like stand at the doors and like open the doors, and then this whole like hundreds of girls have just come out of the shower and they've all covered themselves in all sorts of different smelling things, just this walking towards you and walking past you is like, I can't stand it. And I really cannot stand strong, like chemical based perfume smells anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you might not be able to smell it because you're wearing it, but everyone else can smell it.
I think the other thing as well is because my kids have asthma, I'm more mindful of things like that as well. Like an aerosol can of deodorant will set an asthmatic off. So please be mindful if you are in a shared work environment, shared showers, shared schooling, please try and use something that's not aerosol, because it could really make someone go downhill quite quickly and quite sick.
Yeah.
Oh, right, let's get into the shake-up.
So
let's get into the shake-up of politics. So the Nationals have, this is from Gillian, I'm just reading it out, the Nationals have officially split from the Liberals in the federal parliament.
Yeah, we've got a divorce. Mum and Dad are splitting up. We don't know who's going to get Gina in the divorce. she might spend 6 months with each parent. I don't know. And this apparently the talk has been around for a little while that given the results of the election weren't great for the Liberal Party. The Nats managed to hold on to the vast majority of their seats. The Liberal Party had a complete implosion of whatever. And there's been a big push throughout rural communities for a long time saying that, the Nats have sold their soul. They don't care about people from the bush anymore. They're the party of mining. That's all they care about is mining. They'd sell out ag for mining in a heartbeat. I don't know if that's true or not. I might possibly be inclined to believe that. Given some of their decisions in the past. But there's some very interesting commentary coming out from the likes of the ABC saying that this is an excuse for the Nats to now walk away from the net zero policy position, that it's so they can just support coal mining even more. So it's going to be a really interesting thing to see what happens. Some people are like calling for a Nats and One Nations alliance.
I don't like
that. Can we just get people just be do their job as represent their communities, please? Before that's all I'm asking, just do your job and make policies that are to the betterment of the people you represent, not the betterment of people who give you lots of money. That would be
my. You're there to represent. You are there to represent. You are there to do your job.
And, at this recent election, we saw a lot of unhinged behaviour from, I guess, normal, like what we would call normal political parties, like from the Libs and some members of the Nats. We saw a lot of unhingedness around gender identity and climate change and emission. And it was just extremist behaviour that you don't expect from people who are meant to be more sort of central and sensible. And it didn't work really well for them as a strategy, I have to say. Especially for the Liberals, they got smashed. I think people are just sick of that extremist type of politics.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see what happens with the Nats in particular. This means now that we won't have a National Party representative be the spokesperson, the opposition spokesperson for agriculture. It'll be someone out of the Liberal Party for the first time because they are officially the opposition. So it's going to be interesting. It only just happened a couple of hours ago. People are already making all sorts of wild speculation and those sorts of things. So, by the time this podcast comes out on Friday, we will be a lot more, everything will be a lot clearer. But, it's going to be really interesting moving forwards. So your local representative, Katra, are they a Liberal or a Nat?
A Nat.
A Nat. Nothing will really change for you though. Like, they do a
No,
pretty
I
good job on
don't
the
think so.
ground.
Do you know what? I might
Yeah.
see if I can contact the office this week and see if I can get a statement from them to see where they stand and what they think. We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And we also have to talk about the fact that Susan Ley, I don't know how she pronounces her surname because apparently it changes all the time, is the first female leader of the Liberal Party. And that's another interesting occurrence.
Tell me about that because I was none the wiser living here under my rock.
You were very unwell when all that happened. There's a thing that we like to call that is referred to as the glass cliff. So we're all familiar with the glass ceiling, that they'll raise women up to a certain point and they can see the men up there getting the really, really good jobs. They're allowed to have a medium level job, but they can't get past it. It's a glass ceiling. So a new thing's come around called the glass cliff. And you see this a lot in corporate, big corporations. Like, something goes terribly wrong. They've had to usually sack their CEO and remove half the board. And so they bring in a woman. To wear the fallout, essentially, because she's a friendly face, she's not seen as being particularly aggressive or those sorts of things, and can sort of guide the company through this really bad patch that they are found themselves in. What usually happens, though, is as just as things will either get progressively worse because of things she had no control over, so they sack her and blame everything on her, or as soon as things start to pick up, they go, "Thanks very much, see you later," and kick her out and put a man back in charge. So that's another interesting thing. So people are saying, oh, they've given Susan the glass cliff. She's just going to sit there and do nothing for the next 3 years while all the real political, power brokers sort of rebuild the party around her. She's just the friendly face because she's a woman and it's more relatable and sympathetic. But yeah, I wasn't in the Liberal Party room, obviously. I don't know anything about the internal machinations of the Liberal Party. Don't really want to know either. I just want them to do their damn job. So yeah, it is interesting though that we are seeing female leaders. We've got a female leader of the Greens, female leader of the Libs. Yeah, there are a lot more women in politics now, which is always a good thing. Whether you agree with their actual beliefs or not, it is good to see, because we're 50% of the population, we should be 50% of the parliament. Yeah.
Do you think programs such as the Australian Women in Agriculture Politics new movement, do you think that has to do with seeing that increase in boards across the agricultural sector as well as through governance?
It's a small part of it, to be completely honest. Like, the number of women I speak to that have done like all the leadership and training courses under the sun, but they just still don't get a position until they're tapped on the shoulder by someone. And it's all well and good to give us all this leadership training and support and all that sort of stuff, but until we address the core reasons why women can't volunteer, because most of these ag boards and stuff are volunteer roles. Until we can address the core reasons of what's stopping us from being able to volunteer, lack of childcare, cost of travel and accommodation, inability to leave the home because there's no you you are the primary carer. Until we address those things, we're not going to see the amount of participation from women that we should be. And like, a lot of men love to say this, especially, oh, it should go to the best person for the job. Okay, what if the best person for the job can't actually get to the interview because they've got to look after the kids? Like, those sorts of, and when we talk about inequality, that we're not talking about, oh, we need to be equal. We're talking about we need to be at least be in the same place at the same time so people can make the assessment on who's the best person for the job and remove those barriers that stop us from getting into that room in the first place. That's what we're talking about when we talk about equality. We're not talking about, oh, we have to have 50% women. We have to be allowed the chance to participate. And at the moment, it's a challenge for a lot of people.
Absolutely. So this is all very early on. It's, only recently been announced, but what do you think that will mean for the ag profile for the next 3 years? A prediction.
I think, oh, look, it's what it's going to do is it's going to make like the job of the NFF that much harder. So before, they used to go up the hill and they'd go and meet with the Labor and then they'd go and meet with the LNP. That's two meetings. Now they're going to have to go and meet with the Labor. They're going to have to meet with Liberals. They're going to have to meet with the Nats. They're going to have to meet with the Independents. They're going to have to meet with the Greens. They're going to have so it. And we're already under, like, ag representatives. We're already under resourced. We don't have enough people. And when you go to meet a politician, they don't want to talk to some person halfway down the command chain. They want to talk to the president and they want to talk to the CEO. They don't want to talk to anybody else, and they won't talk to anybody else. So it's going to make those like high profile, I guess, representative roles are going to be extra stretched. And it's going to be a full-time job, like writing briefing papers and talking to people and gathering policy positions and all these sorts of things that go on behind the scenes that the average person doesn't really know what a ag representative body does. But it's a lot of dicking around, writing stuff for politicians to read and go, don't like that, chuck it over their shoulder anyway, but you have to do the work. So that's one thing that's going to be challenging. It's going to be interesting to see when they do come out with their policies, where they do land on the net zero and all that sort of thing, because big drive towards net zero is taking up farmland and building renewable projects on it, which if the Nats are doing their job, should be advocating for the farmers who own that land to determine whether they want that infrastructure or not have it forced on them, as we know can happen in some cases, especially the transmission lines and those sorts of things. And it's going to be really interesting to see where they land on opening up agricultural land for mining, whether we see a split between the Libs and the Nats on their position, or whether the Nats continue down the line of, let's dig it up and drill a hole in it and who cares? I think the mining one's going to be probably the biggest thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that is a lot to take on board for today's episode. So thank you so much, everyone who has been listening. Send through your questions. Keep sending through reels and researchers and any research and anything else that you want us to talk about here on the podcast, which is anything about beyond the headlines for agriculture and bridging the urban-rural divide. If you are enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else that you know will enjoy it and leave a review. Leaving a review helps other people find us. Can't remember what else I want to say, Gillian.
Oh, did you know I did some posts today, so I've scheduled all the posts with some actual reviews for us, right? Someone has given us a 1-star review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever the bloody hell that thing's called. Like, how dare you, you rude. I didn't leave a nasty comment, because then they probably think I would try and track them down and have a word, because I probably would. But they've given, like, we've got 1 1-star review and 1 2-star review. So I think that is someone who just doesn't like us, which is impossible because we are magnificent.
Wonderful, wonderful people. Please leave a 5-star review. So please leave a 5-star review and tell us everything that you're enjoying, because we also use those reviews to for direction of the podcast, because we are here representing what you want to know in ag as well.
Yeah, we'll give you our opinion, but we want to know what you think too. So be sure to get in touch, comment on the socials, all those sorts of things.
And hopefully next episode we'll get back into choosing an ag fab of the week.
Yeah, because now we've got stickers to send. Hooray!
Hooray! Okay, guys, until next time, thank you so very much.
Bye.